This is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark, and today we will be talking about various clans in the Living Land. Before we get into that, we do want to remind you that you can write into us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and we will read your emails in a future episode. If you have questions, we'll try to answer those questions to the best of our abilities. If you have comments, we might comment back and get into some weeds and stuff, but it's always fun. We always appreciate you, our watchers and our listeners. Having said that, today we are doing Living Land, which means I will do my disclaimer as the way that I pronounce the reptilian humanoid creatures can rub some people the wrong way. So, I might say Eidonos, which is how I have heard it. Ever since I started playing, as well as in various Torg Eternity videos where they went around asking the designers and developers, and that was the more common one. But whenever I see the word or think about the word, the subconscious part of my brain wants to make it Greek and an OS at the end in ancient Greece. Greek is an os, so every once in a while I might say Eidonos. So, as Jay says, the different clans have different accents and pronunciations, so that's what you can go with, especially when you're talking about a very low social axiom. You're going to have a lot more clans and tribe mentality where they might intentionally pronounce things different than others. So it's not like a place with the internet where you can get a native speaker of whatever that tongue is, or the, you know, outside of your dialect. And just like in the United States, sometimes it's you all, sometimes it's y'all, sometimes it's you-ins. We can have various ways of pronouncing Eidonos. So, having said that disclaimer, we'll be talking about the various clans, both from a player side and from game masters. How, if you would choose this, or why you might choose one of the various clans for your Eidonos Storm Knight, or how you can use the various clans as a game master and make them distinct and kind of bring out their special abilities. So it's not just a bunch of mindless lizard people that Storm Knights mow down. So in the Living Land book, starting on page 76 is where it has the Eidonos clans and tribes. And the first one they have here is the Blue Spine clan. And the write-up quickly says that they usually are unusual and standoffish, even by Eidonos standards. According to their own oral tradition, they were driven off the land long ago by other clans. It doesn't straight out say, but it says, but rather than drown, they began adapting to their new environment, which I would rightfully assume means water from all their abilities and stuff. But it doesn't just say it right there. Reading it, it kind of caught me a little. Says, for their parts, most other clans believe that they were driven off for a reason. So both sides are, they were driven off, but the ones were like, the Blue Spine were like, hey, we were unfairly driven off, and the other clans are like, nah, we don't remember that reason, but we are sure there was a darn
good there was. It was a good one.
And then it says they favor turquoise or bright blue pigments, usually on their backs. They develop webbed fingers and lungs that allow them to remain underwater for hours at a time. On core Earth, on the parts that have been taken over by the Living Land, they're concentrated around the Florida Keys down to Cuba. But there are small groups scattered across eastern coast, large and large enough rivers.
Before you jump in there, can we let's talk one briefly about the difference between clan and tribe, because we're going to use those words a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of important to understand the hierarchy of clan and tribe before we get too deep in the weeds about the like. This is the Blue Spine Clan, so.
Right. So various groups come together, and you have families that is, and then extended families. And when you get a bunch of families together doing the same thing, helping each other, that's when you get kind of to a tribal level. And then when you have multiple tribes that are not necessarily helping each other all the time, but they still have the same cultural heritage, oral traditions, various customs, markings,
Geographic
yeah,
nearness.
geographic nearness, then that is kind of the clan size. So, and then you have all of it being just Enos. So the clan is like one step down. The Enos as a people, as a race, species, they are separated into clans. And we're only going to be talking about the major clans. As game masters, you can bring in minor clans as you want. And then these clans would further be subdivided into tribes and again down to extended families and things like that. So, is that what you were looking for?
Yes.
Okay. So, the Blue Spine Clan Water Dwellers, they do have some perks that you don't necessarily have to be from, but they suggest or they say a lot of them are from that help out with water-based activities. So, Jay, thoughts on how a player, why they might want to use, why they may want or may w not want to play a Blue Spine Clan Enos?
For player, probably just because they want to be a water Edinos, focusing more on the swimming thing. Being an outcast from Edinos society in general could possibly be seen as a good thing as far as actually joining the Delphi Council. Although personally, in my game, I kind of run the Blue Spines as a little bit more bestial than the other clans, and as one of like the less likely ones to join the Delphi Council, but in other people's, games do whatever. I think that does make a good reason for it. Yeah, and also if you just wanted to be, if you wanted to center your character from around the Florida area, that's where you came through with the invasion. And if you met up with other players, if that's where the game's taking place, it makes sense. Although realistically, you could have Edinos from any clan show up anywhere. I think they are probably, aside from probably the White Spear, which you're just like forbidden from doing usually, they're probably one of the less represented clans that I see. But I think it's usually if you want to focus more on the aquatic nature of it.
Mark, your thoughts?
Blue span, I don't see them necessarily as more bestial, just they're just different than other Adinos. I say it Adinos. The for me the blue spine are very, if you've got water you've got blue spine. And I think as a GM, if you're going to have a mission in around crossing near water in the Living Lands, then the blue spine should make an appearance, because Jay's absolutely correct. They do get underrepresented just because people don't think about them as the adherence to the water. And it doesn't make a distinction between fresh or salt. So if you've got coastal, you can have the coastal variant versus, inland around the Great Lakes or a waterway, Hudson River, whatever. It's for me, the nice thing about the blue spine is that they're not like fish. They don't live in the water, and if you take them out of the water, they're going to flop around and die on the land. They're amphibious, and so they're at home in the water and on the land, and they prefer to be near water because they have acquired this, as they've evolved, a defensive mechanism or an accessibility of using the water just as easily as everyone else uses the land. So where other, like the Red Jaw, they can easily escape the Red Jaw, or they can easily escape if they have to escape there, because they got that whole, I mean, I don't know if, are we going to do, I don't know if we're going to do politics and whatnot, because the social axiom is so low for these guys, but it's kind of important to figure out how the tribes and the clans interact and come together on that front for various storytelling reasons. But the blue spine are good, just because if you're going to do the rule of two and have, you know, the Nile Empire has established a base in this large body of water, you know, the blue spines show up, and either they're allied with them because they're helping, you know, Baru Ka has said help Mobius's troops, or because they're working together in the same purpose, or they're at cross purposes. Maybe they don't like the fact that Mobius's people have invaded their region, and so maybe they're an unusual ally for the Storm Knights. I see them as easily being a part of the Delphi Council if the story calls for it in such a way that they, because the alliance, the way they're written out, or the way the clan's set up, it's an uneasy alliance that Baru Ka just said, hey, you can come to this new land and experience this new place for Lanala, and add that to her bank of experiences, as long as you will do these things for me in the places I ask you to, because you have the ability to go into the water, which gives you, as a game master, a really unique storytelling opportunity of uprooting a Stella that's underwater that isn't related to some underwater superhero base that Mobius put on down there, which is another way to do it. Anyway, I like the blue spine from the standpoint of clans. I like the blue spine. They're just other Edinos. They just have to be in water. Swamps, it isn't just I'm underwater, they're amphibious. So anywhere they can keep their skin wet, play in the water, and have a good time, swamps are good. Anything. Little rivers, big rivers, they prefer to swim and stuff like that. So, you know, a larger body of water that they could get to and get out away from predators would be great, but it's not required.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the swamp aspect also. I almost see them as very taking a niche of crocodilians, whether it's freshwater alligators or saltwater
Wow.
crocodiles, or you know, they can adapt to any of that. Yeah, you can have those hunting, trying to track down where the stele is underwater, and have to, and instead of the typical Edenos sitting on the back of a triceratops, you could have one, you know, hanging on to a mosasaurus or a
Right.
plesiosaur, or you know, something like that, big megalodon or something, which I think would be pretty cool with them. So as a player, yeah, I could see those wanting to do that if your adventures are going to be anywhere that water is going to bring up. You could get some cool ambushes or scouting, you know, underwater, just kind of poke up a little bit. As a game master, you can reverse that and say you're only, you know, stomping through a swamp that's knee deep, and they're laying down, you know, for an ambush or something. So I would just look at all of the different things that various aquatic reptiles and amphibians and the roles that they play, and bring that up through the blue spine. So was there anything else either of you wanted to talk about before we move
Yeah,
to
I guess in like from a game
game
mastering
master point? Yeah.
perspective, one thing I kind of still, the reason I also talk about them being a bit bestial and less likely to be friendly with the Delphi Council necessarily, is because I think one thing that's interesting in this description, it kind of just alludes to it, but it sounds like this is the first invasion that Barak Ka has brought them on. Like, he's been on multiple invasions, like all over the place, and he's been expanding for the glory of Lanala. But this is the first time he actually brought the Blue Spines. And the other clans, aside from the Red Jaws, have been going through all of these crusades, essentially, and they're starting to have doubts about Barak Ka. And, like, is this really what Lanala wants? But for me, the Blue Spines are still fresh. This is their first invasion, so they're like all high up on the power, like they're finally getting to do something. So aside from the Red Jaws, for me, I run it as their kind of like Beric Kaz second, like most trusted, I guess. Not trusted, because it also kind of implies no one trusts them, but they're the most like loyal at the moment. It could change at some point, because no one really knows what they as a clan necessarily want. But I just sort of look at them as being fresh and eager, and they haven't been run down by centuries of invasions yet. So it adds a sort of a different perspective. Whereas the Gold Suns are like, we're done. You know, these guys are fresh.
True. Beric Kaz, just to remind anybody who are let people know who don't know, Beric Kaz, the High Lord of the Living Land, he is practically the second oldest, second most successful High Lord in conquering other realities, going into other cosms and conquering them. So yeah, it says he made an unusual bargain with them and allowed them to participate in this invasion. So that does heavily suggest, as Jay said, that this is their time, that they it's like we rejected you for a reason, but now we're letting you participate in the reindeer games. You know,
Yeah. Right.
kind of a thing going on. So yeah, that's good information that as a game master you might want to bring in and think about that mentality of an outsider group who's been kind of shunned, and even kind of an outsider, because all of them get the outsider
Right.
negative thing. They're like an outsider to the outsiders as a splinter group. So, Mark, any additional thoughts on game mastering or playing?
I kind of covered game mastering for them. I think the blue spine are a good vehicle for your aquatic stuff, which we covered. I think Jay's a little more up on the lore as far as the overall tribes and their histories with Barokah. I just see them as the ones that get the task with the water just because that's what they do. Nobody else can do it. And maybe this time around, as you said, Barokah is the second most experienced High Lord behind, I think, just the Gaunt Man himself. And that makes him dangerous. As primitive and as low social axiom as he has, he's potentially the most dangerous because he's the most experienced. But that means he's crafty. Just because he got a low social axiom doesn't mean he can't be smart and wise in the tactics and the use of the assets that he has. So he knows when to use his Edinos warriors and when not to, and the Red Jaw are his shock troops. But the you could almost look at the blue spine as the Navy SEALs of the branch, because these guys are tough. As Jay said, they you can look at them as not as experienced in the invasions as everybody else, or you could go the other direction and say, yeah, but they are, they just don't get used as often because they're specialists. And they only get used in that special circumstance that applies to what they're good at. You wouldn't take them and throw them in a desert environment because that's a waste of their talents. But you could send the Red Jaw out there, and he's got lots of them to send, but he doesn't have a lot of the blue spine because the blue spines, they're centered around the water. So if you don't want to find if you want to find them, you know how to get them. I think they're great for any kind of underwater. You use them from a GM perspective. You can use them as liaisons for the Delphi Council when you need a guide. You can make them a foil that if you need a guide in the water, a way to cross a large body of water, anything to do with the water, then maybe there's an interaction that you have to do to win them over in order to take advantage of that. And if you fail that, then the players can still accomplish their goal. It's just harder because now they have to find it on their own, go overland, deal with the threats on their own, et cetera. Whereas a blue spine guide would walk them through that and avoid the man-eating plants over here and the large pack of dinosaurs and the territory that the T-Rex has over here, and they know where, this looks like a great spot to cross the river, but don't do it because there are piranha here, that kind of thing. They would know all of that. So, there's a non-combat interaction with the blue spine you can have, to pick up a guide from them if you wanted to.
So let's move on to the Ghost Clan. They're the next one. They are located up in the western US and Canada. It says they're perhaps the most reclusive of all the Enos tribes in the Living Land. The so-called Ghost Clan is typically considered a myth. So we might look at that. The Enos of this tribe, and it says tribe, should say clan, adore themselves in leather-dyed white and smoky gray, allowing them to blend into patches of deep mist. Using the deep mist for concealment is one of the tribe's hallmarks, as is their uncanny bond with some of the dinosaurs in their territory. Often, even the most aggressive and dangerous of these huge creatures give the Ghost Clan a wide berth. Or Ghost Clan, sorry. Even when they are encountered together, some reports have indicated that there are priests in the Ghost Clan who have mastered miracles that allow them to exert powerful control over any nearby dinosaurs. It is not known if there is a single leader of the Ghost Clan, but the Enos defer to a group of senior priests of Lanala that are called the Grey Ones in the Enos's language. Only a handful of Storm Knights have successfully made contact with this clan, not tribe. This is largely due
At
to
this
the
point.
Enos of this clan having a propensity for isolation. The Ghost Clan is highly territorial. They routinely send out search parties to try to locate unexplored ruins of lost civilizations that seem more in common on the West Coast. The runes have deep fascination for the Ghost Clan, seeing these fragments of other cosmos as things that Lanala has preserved for a reason. Thus, the Ghost Clan serves Lanala by securing these runes. However, some of the more adventurous members of the clan have begun experimenting with items found within the runes, tinkering with technology that the other tribes would certainly shun. Overall, the Delphi Council has noted the Ghost Clan has a, in quotes, highly mysterious group, not typical hostile, but strongly defensive of their territory. Approach with caution. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on the Ghost Clan?
I feel the Ghost Clan is the clan we have both the most and least information on at the same time. They're very mysterious. They're supposed to be mysterious. Not too much is known about them. I do think that obviously it's more than people know that they exist, because that's going to come up. But at the very beginning of the invasion, perhaps it's like a myth, but it should become evident pretty quickly. But the reason we know a lot about them is one of the Delphi missions that Greg Gordon wrote deals heavily with Ghost Clan manners of speaking, traditions, all kinds of things. And they're listed as Ghost Clan specific, but I think a lot of them could probably be taken in general for most Adinos. I don't know if we want to get into any of that stuff maybe at the end, like the campfire talk or any of that stuff.
Don't
So
spoil it.
yeah. Well, it's a guy in a camp. So there's a lot of flavor for Adinos and Ghost Clan specifically in that adventure, which it's kind of a shame that it's locked away in an adventure. To be honest, you could probably read most of that stuff and it wouldn't have, tell you anything about the adventure itself. It's just a lot of extra flavor. One of the big things being that the, and I've talked to Greg about this outside of that adventure just for other Adinos things, but the Ghost Clan tends not to deal with abstracts very often. They're very direct in how they talk. It's like, this person does this, right? And then that person does this, and then this thing does this. And they'll go through that whole chain instead of explaining, in a simpler way. So there's a lot of good flavor there. Now, as a player, obviously, if you want to be the sneaky guy, then Ghost Clan is probably what you want to do. And it really comes across to me that Ghost Clan is more or less done with the invasion. They came in the Ghost Council, or what was it, the Grey Ones, have agreed to help Barak-Kaa, and There are going to be ghost clan scouts, perhaps assassins, working with him, led by Rex Satar. But many of the ghost clan have just taken land in the West Coast, and they just want to be left alone now. So they're very isolationist. They do take humans, but it's not very common. And they're more concerned with exploring wonders at this point. So they're almost operating independently of the invasion at this point, but they still have ties. As long as Rex Satar is still around, Barak Kaa does have a voice out there. Because I do feel Barak Kaa does have to kind of micromanage a little bit due to the social axioms. Every once in a while, he has to show up and remind people, you know, hey, I'm in charge here.
I'm still around.
Don't think that you could just hide here in the mists. And that's the other big thing I personally view, is that they have a stronger connection to the mists than the other clans. It's not really said anywhere, but that's just how I run it. Yeah, but generally as a player, you get to be mysterious and probably the stealthy guy. And it gives you a good excuse for being obsessed with wonders and acquiring eternity shards and stuff. Because it does mention that they do start to work kind of like trophies of these strange things that they find. So other Adinos kind of shun these things, but Ghost Clan, if it's from a wonder or it's possibility enhanced in some way, then they'll hang on to it.
Mark, your thoughts on the Ghost Clan?
Ghost Clan, I think we get, I think, I don't mean this to say it, I'm going to say it the way I'm going to say it, but I don't really mean it the way that's going to come out, but I think the Ghost Clan gets overused. The Ghost Clan, because the Ghost Clan is like the clan of Adinos that can sneak around the best, they fill that role. And you don't find, you know, when something's being set up and we need an Adinos to sneak around, oh, let's get the Ghost Clan, because they are tied. And it does say in that first paragraph that they use the deep mist for concealment. It's one of their tribe's or their clan's hallmarks. So that's, whereas the Delphi Council folks get lost in the mist and other people, you see the mist as a threat, the Ghost Clan sees it as a blanket of security, and they can fade in and out. It's almost like in other games, you know, Shadow Step or other something like that, where this is we're jungle's our place, and this is the mist is our place, and this is the thing that we do. So that becomes that's a night, from a GM standpoint, that's a nice resource. If you need to have someone show up either for weal or woe, the Ghost Clan is your Adinos when the mist starts to roll. Just have the mist start to roll in, and then all of a sudden when these guys steps out or when these pulls in or whatever, and you have them be the thing that you need them to be, but you're gonna have to run the Ghost Clan to fill that role. From the player standpoint, they're absolutely the sneaky guys, the recon guy, the scout, snoop and poop. Because they're shrouded in mystery, you can, they're malleable. So from a player's perspective, you can fit almost any backstory you want into the Ghost Clan. It's harder to put a human jacket into that. You could do it. Someone that got lost or separated from their party in the living land, and they were struggling for survival, and they put up a valiant fight, and Lenala blessed them, and now they're chosen of Lenala, and the Ghost Clan adopted them, took them on, and now you've got that whole, they're part of the part of that. That's how you can work something like that in there. It's they listed it as very rare, but from a player's perspective, if I'm going to make a living land human and I want to be from the Ghost Clan, then that's probably what you're going to do almost every time. But because they're curious about wonders, that makes them a good candidate, in my opinion, for Delphi Council connection, because you can easily frame that as the Delphi Council and their people are kind of the biggest wonder they've ever encountered. And so they're very curious where wonders are concerned, and these people come and go in their land, and maybe, you know, let's be curious about them. They have many wondrous devices, and we haven't figured out yet whether they're, you know, they're good or bad, but they do the same kind of things that the wonders, that the things that we find in the wonders do. And that is, I don't know what they do, but, you know, look at this thing. This thing is very cool, and so let's put this over here on the wall with the rest of our red and blue knickknacks. The Delphi Council offers that opportunity for the Ghost Clan, so that's an easy in for either a player character, a Storm Knight, to be a Ghost Clan Adinos or Chosen of Lanala, or for you to step in from any other place to into that clan. But they do seem to have a higher spiritual connection, lore wise. So I think if you're going to make flip side of that, if you're going to make an Adinos Gotak or Optant that's throwing miracles around, that also makes the Ghost Clan a good choice because they have that connection, that spiritual connection with the living land. From the GM standpoint, these are great guides. I mean, there's no better guide for a general purpose living land guide because they have such a connection with the Deep Mist. You can make it so that this group of Storm Knights can go from point A to point B faster just because their Ghost Clan guide walks them there in a damn near straight line because they know what they're doing in the Deep Mist. You can also get in a lot of trouble with that, especially if that same Ghost Clan guy happens to be a double agent and he really likes Baruka a lot, and all of a sudden he strands you. You know, 180 degrees off in the middle of the dinosaur territory where you're going to get eaten, and leaves you to fight your way out, and you're not even close to your, now the mission is off and it's all about survival because you got betrayed. It's a whole different mission, which is kind of cool in and of itself. You go in thinking you're going to do this one mission in the living land, and all of a sudden you're abandoned by the guy that was supposed to help you, and Baruka thinks he laughs at you because now he thinks you're all going to die, and that's all you do. The goal of that mission now becomes the get the hell out of Dodge and do it, getting out alive. Yeah, but they got to, if you got a wonder, and it's the living land, so you're going to have a wonder. It's like the blue spine in water. You kind of have the Ghost Clan just wherever you got a wonder because that's their thing. Just like the Deep Mist, they like wonders a lot. And so they're usually around a wonder. And if you ball all of that together and the wonder happens to have some kind of spiritual connection with an eternity shard or other reality rated stuff, you got to have the Ghost Clan because it's almost like everything they do.
Yeah, I like the Ghost Clan. I also could see if we're, talk about movies or references and things like that. The Mist, Stephen King's The Mist, where because it says that they are able to get those aggressive, dangerous dinosaurs and other creatures of the living land on their side, and so you could be w stumbling through the Deep Mist, and all of a sudden that tree you're leaning up against is actually a Boraka leg or something like that,
That would
or
suck.
all of a sudden out of the
Talk
mist
about
comes
dramatic.
some screaming, I don't know, velociraptors or something out of nowhere. I like them because again they're not like hate Delphi Council, hate humans, but they're very defensive. So interactions depending on the Storm Knights that go into it, you could somehow form an alliance with a tribe or extended family within the Ghost Clan, where in other places, or if you fail your figuring out their customs and their way and insult them, then they're like, nope, you're not going through our territory at all. And I think that adds some flavor. I'm gonna say for the Ghost Clan, where Mark, you were saying that kind of like overused. I would say keep them like the early days, and this is gonna show my age, of the Fawns or Snake Eyes, where they're mysterious and they're cool. Because as G.I. Joe went on, everybody wanted to know more about this mysterious Snake Eyes, and then you get pieces of his backstory, and by the end of the comic run, he was just an ordinary guy. I mean, well, he's not ordinary, but everything's explained and there's no mystery. And the same thing I know with the Fonz, then he jumps the shark, which is the famous, where the Happy Happy Days show kind of just got corny, even more corny. Or I just had it and it kind of slipped away. There's another one where you have that Boba Fett in the original Star Wars was a super mysterious one, and now his whole life story's been, you know, explained. So I would try my hardest to keep the clan always in that mysterious type thing, and you might go through, and that was First Walk, right, Jay, that adventure?
Yeah,
I wanted to come back to that.
We have mentioned it many times, is an excellent adventure, and we all highly recommend it. When you get through that, you understand more, but at the same time, since their customs and certain things are so different and they're still alien to the Storm Knights, it's almost as many questions get laid out after that than actually got answered. And I would say kind of, you know, keep that inside. And again, the clan tribe structure, you might get one of the tribes sort of being halfway decent, halfway friendly against you, but that doesn't mean all of the tribes are. But I do
see the one next door, not so much.
Right. And I would also agree, you know, of the just all the other stuff that we've been talking about with the Ghost Clan. They're good. They're going to be good guides. They're going to get you through the deep mist. They can strand you in the deep mist. They're going to be territorial.
They don't talk much.
Yeah, they, you know, they don't talk much. And they are interested in all these wonders and these leftover cosms that High Lords have destroyed. And there's little remnants of these, you know, cosms.
Actually, yeah.
That
this is another like personal thing, like side thing, but I also in my game kind of run it as they are the clan most likely to have, I guess, priests or anyone secretly hoarding writing, like specifically like the carvings from the Ustana from back in the day, because it is mentioned that there are. What they say, we would call them scholars, but you know, right. There are Edinos that study these things and have actually learned the old insectoid language. But and the Burka wants everything destroyed, and because these are the ones that often go into the wonders, I imagine they probably have secrets, not a secret society, but you know, like a group of individuals that actually follow this. And in my personal headcanon that is in no way official at all, that is sort of what leads to maybe what's behind with the gray ones. Like, what are they? They might know something else. So there's lots of ways you can go with these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they've been picking up little bits of history and what really happened in the past through Barakaz and their, you know, with him, not just to conquer, but to keep the knowledge and to find more wonders, because
Lenal is leaving these things for a reason, right?
Right. So it's kind of like they're the Edenos detectives.
Yeah. Archaeologists.
Yeah. The old style where you just dug and you didn't care about anything.
No, I don't know. I think we're getting ready to get into the archaeologists. So I think these guys are more, I think Liam and Scott are right. I think they're the detectives.
Yeah.
Okay.
True, I see.
if we're fine with the Ghost Clan, we can move on to the Gold Sun Clan. That their location is throughout the Yucatan. And quickly define, because we use the word to make sure everybody is on the same page, we use the word jacket. And jacket isn't a coat, light coat that you put on. It is a follower of Lenala, and they're mostly Edenos, but they can be others. And each of the clans is given a designation of how they view or accept non-Edenos jackets. So whether that's a human, or if you allow Stalingers, or even elves that get converted, whatever.
Bence.
The blue spine is very rare. The ghost is very rare, but the Gold Sun Clan is just as yes. So they're very, very accepting on it. So it says that they are mostly concentrated in the Yucatan Peninsula, The Gold Sun Clan are much less threatening than their counterparts in the United States. For the most part, the Gold Sun Clan simply prefers to be left alone, wandering nomadically throughout the Yucatan, accompanied by herds of domesticated dinosaurs. The name of the tribe comes from the golden jewelry which the Eidnos adorn themselves. The Gold Sun Clan is led by a bombastic and shrewd chieftain named Kalikosh. The chieftain, for his part, is very protective of his people and pays only token respect to Baraka's position as High Lord. The Delphi Council has labeled this particular tribe of Eidnos as, quote, friendly, consider possible allies against the invaders, end quote. The Gold Sun Clan is notable not only for their wealth that they openly display, but also for their extensive use of dinosaurs as assistants, helpers, and comrades in battle. Nearly every type of dinosaur has found its way in the tribe, either for hunting, fighting off attackers, or assisting with gathering food or other resources. Some core Earth archaeologists suspect that the Gold Sun Clan has begun robbing many of the ancient burial sites in Mexico, and that the golden adornments in the tribe cherishes so much may in fact be stolen from core Earth's ancient Mayan and Aztec civilization. So, Jay, thoughts on the Gold Sun?
I think it's interesting to juxtapose them with the Ghost Clan with the dinosaurs, because the Ghost Clan avoid dinosaurs naturally, like just either through miracles or their connection with the mist or what have you. Dinosaurs just don't mess with them, whereas the Gold Sun have domesticated a lot of dinosaurs. And they use these dinosaurs as workers and as war mounts, maybe even as pets. If you want to play a Dinos who has dinosaur pals, it's one of the archetypes, then Gold Sun makes the most sense for that. I should mention at this point too, like, we do, like, these are all kind of generalities. Right. It's not like if you're a stealth guy, you have to be a Ghost Clan. If you want to be a swim person, you've got to be Blue Spine. Like, any clan can do any of the thing, but it just tends to be generally what happens. So a lot of the Gold Sun Clan, they have the domesticated, they have the infrastructure for it. Like, they probably have way more than any of the others. So there's that. And if you want to bling out and have some jewelry, that's your best option too. I don't remember where in the book it is, or if it's even in the source book, or if it's in an adventure, but I remember there is talk of mostly through Ketakals, the idea is that, you know, there's living things and there's dead things. Dead things never lived and usually shouldn't. It is possible, though, for a stone to be a living thing. It might have a spirit, but because metals are artificially created, most of the clans do not consider them living things. They are dead things. But the Gold Sun have been known to refer to their jewelry or gold, like metals, as living. I don't remember where that's from, but it is something that's kind of like stuck with me as one of the big differences for them. And one of the interesting things is because of the chaos going on down in that geographic area, the Gold Sun might actually be one of the Delphi Council's biggest allies down there if it's treated right, because everything else, there's like blood cultists, there's cartels, the government is, you know, barely functioning at this point. So if anything, the Gold Sun could be a stabilizing influence, which is very different than, like it says, in the United States and Canada, where things are going way, way worse. And that can actually also be one of the interesting things, because when people transform to the living land, they don't necessarily want to go back to having an office job. And if you're being constantly hunted by red jaws, or, you know, everyone's being sacrificed to get turned into a zombie in Chicago or whatever, then yeah, you want this over. But if you're actually living a good life as a spiritually fulfilled individual, with a bunch of pet dinosaurs, then maybe you don't want to go back. Maybe the Delphi Council might get some pushback from the transformed humans, like that are fine with the way things are. It's an interesting aspect. So not only for being a Nadinos, being a human, a transformed human player character, being a gold sun, an honorary gold sun is a good choice for that.
Mark, your thoughts on the Gold Suns?
Well, and to keep with that in that line from Jay, jackets are more common. Jackets are spelled JAKATTS, jackets.
I've gone to just saying jackets to really stop
Jackets.
the coat talk.
That's not a bad. I may have to adopt that if I can remember it. But they are less. They're just listed as rare instead of very rare. So you find people integrated with the Gold Sun more frequently than any other clan, I think.
Yes.
But and part of that is because of the I think part of that is because the jewelry to me in my mind, the adorning themselves with the gold and the gemstones that they find in the earth, that kind of bothers me a little bit because of the low social axiom. This is more of a display thing that higher level, higher tier. So because it's more, there's a lot of ostentatiousness to it, which is good for if the player characters want someone who's more outgoing and has more flamboyant dress and style and whatnot. Gold Sun's the natural way to go, because they tend to be more in Central and South America, Mexico and that region, and they are connected with anywhere you find the Mayans or the Aztec people and their history and their culture connected. The Gold Suns are absolutely the Adinos that you need to have dropped in there, but they have they also have the tendency to be the ones that like the whites, like the Ghost Clan. We haven't gotten the White Spear yet, so the Ghost Clan likes to go in and dig into the wonders and bring back the stuff the wonders have. Whenever the Gold Sun find those, because we see this, you see this on the news all the time. That this the jungle has given up this pyramid that it did nobody knew was there because it overgrew it, and then the detritus from the decay of the leaves and the branches and trees above buried it, and it looked like a big hill. Well, radar, whatever, overflew it and said, "Hey, you know what? That's a building down there." And then they start digging into it, and we find this new location that we didn't know about. Well, the Gold Sun are really good at that, but they tend to be, and this is why I said I think they're the archaeologists. They tend to be more Indiana Jones, grave robber kind of. Let's go in there and find the shiny stuff. And to me, because they like to call their gold jewelry and adornments living things, I tend to have those always shaped. Either they found them shaped in a the shape of something that was alive, like a person or an animal or something along those lines, and so they look at it and say, "Yes, that shiny thing, which is pleasing to the eye, has the soul of the great Tyrannosaur, or this looks like one of our ancestors, and so we call it Bupuka because that's who that looked like and whatever, and we've declared that's who it is. It's the spirit of our ancestor, so we put this on our optant who heals people, and that's et cetera, whatever." They're, in my opinion, I like to run them as the most friendly Adinos clan out there. They because they are flamboyant and outgoing there, and they like to work with the dinosaurs. They don't see the dinosaurs as an imminent threat like everybody else does, because you go, I mean, we've been calling when we were going through the Cosm cards. Every card that put a threat that said, "Yo, you have to face it," became a Dino Attacks card, mostly because we played it first, but because they all operate the same way. Well, you go to Living Land, everybody's like, "Okay, when's the dinosaur attack?" Because we're in the Living Land, it's coming. You know it's coming, and it's a dinosaur that's going to try and eat you. And it's probably going to happen more than once because we're in the Living Land. Well, the Gold Sun don't walk around with that mindset. They're like, "Oh, look, we could haul a lot of stuff with that guy right there. Right. And then that, again, that's pushing the social axiom a little bit high, because they're stepping up their tool, and then the tech axiom, I think, to a little bit too, because they got to adapt more of the stuff specifically to, all right, I got a dinosaur that I can do stuff with. How do I make that dinosaur more useful? Well, I have to strap baskets onto it, or I have to create a harness that allows me to then pull something with it, or I have to build a corral for it, or I have to build a feeding trough for it, or I have to attract it and then keep it in near, so there's all this technology that they have that no other Adinos clan for the most part has to deal with dinosaurs, because that's one of their things. Because of that, I think that they're a natural, as the book says, our natural Delphi Council ally. They're a great vehicle for stories that again, the Blue Spiner Water and the Ghost Clan are anywhere that you have the Mist. Well, these guys are anywhere where you're going to have that ancient Aztec or Mayan pyramid, or if you want to bring a South American or Hispanic flavor into the game, because that just is where they show up, because that's where the Mayan and the Aztec people hung out. And that's the ancestries that they have. And that's a very rich and very colorful and very fantastic storytelling background that you can draw from that the Gold Sun are just natural pairs for. But the other side of that, even though they're the most friendly, like the Ghost Clan guy that abandons you in the middle of the deep woods and all, or the deep mist, and all of a sudden you got all this problem, you can stick behind the Gold Sun, this fifth column of Gotaks that are allied with Baruka, and they use that old school Aztec blood magic that is, they're doing stuff, that dark stuff behind the scenes, that maybe they're more closely allied with Rex Dalek and that kind of thing. And now you can bring that element into the story that, here's the friendly outgoing, everybody likes them, neighbors down south, but they've got a dark side that you didn't know about. And maybe they know, and maybe they're hiding it, or maybe they don't know and you're helping them out by exposing it. Who knows? But that's part of the great story you can do from the GM side. From the player's side, these guys are a natural for anything you want to do with the Delphi Council, because they're so outgoing and friendly. So you can just say, I don't know what clan I'm from, just rubber stamp a ghost clan on it, and you can just, it works because they are so friendly. They are also steeped in mysticism, and you can put that into the blood magic side if you wanted to kind of get an Aurora flavor in there somehow, or if you want to do it where it's just mystical, kind of like the Ghost Clan has their spiritual connection. But it's more druid style, in my opinion, to put a different spin on it, because they like to do the Adinos stuff or the dinosaur stuff. And so you've got that animal affinity thing, which, as Jay pointed out or alluded to, it's just a natural. If you're going to do the perks that build you up as a beast rider, or that have that animal companion from the living land, the Gold Sun's a natural for that.
Yeah, I would also say that this is a way that you could turn that dino experience that everybody's expecting. We're going to get attacked by dinos, have a dinosaur appear, but he's just like a sheep that wandered off, and then a Gold Sun, member comes and hey, this is his, mine. I lost him. I'm bringing him back. Or they, it doesn't immediately attack, so the Storm Knights hopefully hesitate a little and then maybe see some harness or a little dog tag or
Fido,
the name tag on it or something like that, or a brand, like a brand of ownership on it. Now I would
Gold Sun brand dinosaur.
I would not go this far, but something that you could use as kind of a, hey, how could these dinosaurs be used, is look at the Flintstones. That's kind of when I first started reading that they use them for everything, for assistance, for, so to take a look at that. Maybe you don't have dinosaur record players, but you could think about other ways, even like some small pterosaurs you could have be like homing pigeons, or, you know, delivering parrot messages, since there's not writing or, you know, things like that. So you could come up with some pretty interesting things, I think, as a game master. And as a player, kind of what both Jay and Mark kind of touched on lightly was that all the Eidnos have this distinction between living and dead, but it's not necessarily how we view living and dead. And sometimes rocks and soil and nature can be living because it once was, and maybe there's a spirit associated with it, where something that has been worked, like a metal knife, wouldn't, but a bone knife or a stone knife or an obsidian, you know, sword might. But the technology axiom of the living land does support copper weapons and bronze weapons. So that is something that if you wanted to have a Storm Knight, say, Eidnos, that's a little bit different and wants to carry around a copper sword, you can look at, I believe it's the Nile Empire. Amazons have bronze, I think, weapons or something like that. And you could have them consider that it has a spirit in it, whether it does or not. That could be something between you and the player. Maybe they'll pick it up as a trademark weapon, and then you would allow it to do that. And then after that, you get a sacred weapon, and it would just be like something that might have been found in a wonder that's kind of living. But it's they would have the least problem with it because they're already wearing gold and stuff. So that's just a way to do things a little bit differently. As Jay said, even though these clans, they kind of have a generality, that doesn't mean that every single one of the tribes is exactly like that, and every single one of the individual members of that clan is like it. You're going to have variations of it, and things like that. So let's go ahead and move on to the Red Jaw clan, which is in the northeast and southeast of the U.S., particularly Atlanta and New York. The non-Eidnos jackets are rare. And they are the most feared and hated of the Eidnos clans, is the Red Jaw. They are Barakah's clan. They consider him the one true prophet of Lanala. They gain their names from the crimson patterns tattooed on their faces, granting each Eidnos warrior a fierce aspect. Skilled tattoo artists are given great respect amongst the clan. The warrior's favorite dinosaur may be given special tattoos, or may have sigils marking its important achievements marked on the flesh of his arms or back. The Red Jaw clan is concentrated mainly in the northeastern, southeastern United States. Like I said, they have domesticated a number of dinosaur breeds, but they consider all the bounty of the living land to be theirs and theirs alone. This attitude has fostered mistrust between the tribes and the other clans and that tribes in the living land, resulting in a number of minor incidents. They are somewhat xenophobic, tolerate few, if any, conversions by humans or other species, and the High Lord Barakah encourages the tribes towards savagery and aggression. The Red Jaw warriors are infamous for killing any intruders they find within the ruins of the living land, and Barakah has a stronghold over the tribe or the clan through religious control. So, Jay, thoughts on Red Jaw?
I mean, the Red Jaws are the ones you're probably going to encounter the most as enemies. They're the ones that get thrown at you. they're pretty much all presented as religious fanatics, and like everything, no matter what Barakah does, they worship him. Even his failures will get interpreted as signs of his success or destiny. There are some who are starting to maybe disbelieve at this point, which is where player characters would come in. But it is worth noting that even other Eidnos, you're probably the second most hated clan, so there's going to be issues dealing with other Eidnos. And humans, I mean, as far as most of the people in North America are concerned, the Red Jaws are the Edinos. The Ghost Clan are mysterious, almost a rumor. The Gold Sun, that's down in Mexico, and what's going on there is going to be very different than what's been going on in the US and parts of Canada. The Red Jaw are much more savage than the others, and it's just been kill, kill, kill. And so that's what the media has seen, and that's what everybody knows. And that's what Stormbreak uses for their propaganda. So it's going to take a while for any Red Jaw Edinos to make friends on the Delphi Council. That said, if you want to make like the Berserker style, they're a good choice for that. I always took the Red Jaws as being like symbolic from when they would get a kill, they would probably like devour parts of it and have the blood dripping down their jaws, and then the tattoos are symbolic of that, maybe after they've gotten their first kill or what have you. The tattoos, just in general, are a neat little aspect that you can use as a player to differentiate your character and say what kind of cool tattoos they have. And if you are a Beast Rider and you get a dinosaur, you can have matching tattoos, just kind of cool stuff. Also, that could lead to like being a Sata flower eater. There's a lot of different options for them, but almost all of those options are loud and smashy. I'm sure there are of course Optints and Gotaks of the Red Jaws. I think there's actually probably a lot of Gotaks for the Red Jaws because Barakah has been very working very hard to promote that, and they are the most religiously, like most zealous about cause version of Kennacals. So the other clans might be a little like, eh, but they are like, no, this is what we're doing. These Gospog, they're fine. Don't worry about it, right? So you might have your work cut out for you as a player, but as a GM, they're a good one to use. You do want to not necessarily have them all just be like dumb brutes, though. Like, just because they have a low social axiom doesn't mean they're dumb. There's a lot of things that they can do, but they will probably be the most in your face. And depending on your table and like what kind of like level of PG you're running it on, like the most gory kind of shows you might get outside of Tharkold. So it's just know when to use it is all I could say, I guess.
Mark, your thoughts on the Red Jaw?
These are Barakah's shock troopers. These are the most ubiquitous threat that a direct threat from the High Lord that Storm Knights will face in the Living Land. They are everywhere. I know that the book says that they're predominantly certain areas, but because they are Barukha's number one shock troopers, they are utilized everywhere because he can trust them. He knows the Red Jaw clan isn't gonna let him down as far as loyalty is concerned. To that point, they will bend the truth in ways that would make a gymnast proud to support whatever Barukha wants the truth to be. So the Red Jaw are willing to go along with anything they have to in order to keep the plan that Barukah has going. They are nearly always going to be the bad guy. Can you cast a Red Jaw in a favorable light? You can. I wouldn't do it very often. There's because they're just they're not there's no question that they are the zealots of the invasion. They're the core troop that Barukah has brought over to run his invasion, and he will throw them in human well in the Dinos waves at his enemies and not think twice about letting thousands sacrifice themselves if it will get him where he wants, because I mean that's the law of the survival of the fittest, and the Red Jaw are all about survival of the fittest. So you want to have a test of so one-on-one challenge of champions, where if you want to talk to somebody, you have to beat their champion. That's totally what Red Jaw would go for. You don't get anywhere if you don't beat me. Okay, you beat me, you can go in, but that's this time. I'll be better next time. And so they won't let it go either. Dinosaurs, they domesticate dinosaurs, but they do it. I wouldn't so much use domesticate, whereas the Gold Sun will domesticate, and that's a favorable, let's tend to our animal, take care of our animals and make sure that they're well cared for, because it's symbiotic. We take care of them and then they help us do things we couldn't otherwise do. The red jaw subjugate dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs that they have are almost always used for war or some aspect of war, transporting war goods, plowing up a Gospog field, Boraka trashing something big that they need knocked down, herding carnivores into a certain way so that they eat up the bad guy and degrade their ability to fight before they go in. It's dinosaurs are just tools of destruction for the Red Jaw. And they are very religious, but they're religious in a zealotry style of religiosity, if you will. It's Barukah's way, and that's it. They don't have room for anything else, which puts them at odds with the next clan we're going to talk about in a minute, because they are not all about now. Their religious, their zealotry for Barukah is Barukah's interpretation of Lenala, which is what everybody else does. Whereas the Whitespear, which I'm getting ahead of us, but the Whitespear are all about Rex the Lek, which is completely not Lenala. And so the Red Jaw don't have a problem going to war with the Adinos either. And that's the whole, they don't care if Barukah says go kill these people over here. They don't care who they are. Other Adinos, humans, Delphi Council, Victorians, shock troopers from Nyla, they don't care. This is, oh, you want us to go over there? Okay, we'll go over there. So they're your guys from a GM standpoint. They're your guys when you need to send people in mindlessly to do a job because that's what they do. From a player standpoint, Red Jaw is a tough clan to make your backstory from, unless you want that kind of fish out of water thing where, I know I'm going to be I've chosen the bad guys and I have decided to eschew all that. I've woken up from Barukah's fever dream, and I've seen that I'm going to bring the light to the Red Jaw and help my tribe, recover from this and get them out of the. That's a great backstory for a Red Jaw, but you have to understand that you're going to have to play that crisis of faith thing, because the Red Jaw were 100% in the tank for Barukah, and this is the invasion, we're going to do it. And they are starting, some of them are starting to go question it. And when the other zealot Red Jaw find the guys questioning, they just wipe them out, because we don't have room for that. We don't have time for that. But there are some that are starting to question it. There's a little infighting going on, and that's kind of a dirty secret in the Red Jaw, is that they've got that turmoil, in that inner turmoil. And so you could absolutely be from that. You just have to understand that crisis of faith is kind of an integral thing to who your character is. You will almost, if you play a Red Jaw as a Storm Knight, you will almost always be misidentified as a bad guy, no matter where you go, because the Red Jaw are. Tattoos are a huge thing about, should be, in my opinion, should be a huge thing about your character, either because you're covering them up because you've decided that's not who I am anymore, or because you embrace the whole idea that when a Red Jaw does something that's momentous in their lives, they enshrine that on their body with a tattoo. And so you can have that become I did this mission, and now you have to get a tattoo for it, because it was very, we had glory. We committed glory, and so now maybe that's your thing. Every time we score, we hit glory in a mission, I have to get a tattoo to commemorate that glorious deed, because that's momentous in my life. Or maybe it's only when your Red Jaw does something glorious. It doesn't count when somebody else does it, which, then you're not going to have to get as many tattoos, which is a good thing and a bad thing. But that's a great, the tattoo aspect, the red jaws, because it's literal. As I think Liamen, or I can't remember who said it. I was kind of looking at something, but it was like eaten and the blood coming down. Their red jaw, their jaws are red. Yeah, their jaws are red because that's the whole, I am fearsome. The blood, the fresh, and that's, it's not faded red. It's not, an off red. It's blood red, vibrant. I look like I just stuck my maw into the belly of a dead dinosaur I just killed, and I came up and said, "What do you want?" And it's just dripping off. That's the kind of red jaw that they have, and that's what they want to project because, as Jay said, they're very savage, and that's who they are. So you want to play a melee striker, Deathclaw, Whiptail, that kind of thing. That Red Jaw is great for that.
Yeah, I'd like to go a little bit further with what was said about Jay was talking about the Gold Sun being, really acceptive of other non-Enos Jakats, and but in the United States, that's a Mexico thing, but in the United States, the Red Jaw are the Enos that the citizens of the United States and Canada, that's what they think of when they the Ghost Clan are your boogeymen that you tell your kids to go to sleep, otherwise the Ghost Clan will get you because they're not obvious. The Blue Spine are kind of there when in those places, but not just necessarily
Don't go in
all
the
over,
swamp.
right? The invasion can work two ways, and I see the two extremes being the Sun, Golden Sun Clan and the Red Jaw, where the Golden Sun, the Axiom Wash happened, and they just accepted everybody. Hey, come with us. We'll show you how it's done. You can have a dinosaur buddy. And all the humans are like, wow, this is awesome. What's your favorite? That's the question you still ask when you're 20, 30s, 40s, or whatever. So you get to actually have your favorite dinosaur as your pet or your buddy. And that's a way to gain to solidify those zones based off of transformation and having a more populace that accepts your reality. The Red Jaw are the opposite. The Red Jaw are the we'll kill everybody else, and then our reality is the only one here because we're the only ones believing it. So that's very nice to contrast the two. Along, talking about the dinosaur uses, the Gold Sun, I see them as pets or friends, that type of aspect. The Red Jaw, I could see that as Mark said, you're subjugating them or not even viewing them necessarily as a pet, but as an extension of yourself or something that is useful.
Tool.
A
I
tool
think there
that.
was, I think there's a section in the Velociraptor entry where it talks about some view them as pets, but most Edinos don't view like dinosaurs as pets at all.
Right. That I could see, the marking that the Red Jaw would do, the tattooing to themselves and their dinosaur as either my property or it's matching tattoos because it's an extension of me. It's not its own thing, it's just an extension of my awesomeness, my, brutality, my strength. Or another way to do it is fighter pilots, when they shoot down an enemy, they put a little, tally mark or a little symbol, you have some primitive, hand, like a human handprint or, Enos handprint, for the types that you've killed or whatever. So just, I see him looking at
Just
them as
claw.
different, a little bit different. But yeah, the Red Jaw Clan would be the most difficult to be a Storm Knight. Not impossible. It's just something that you would have to think about. Especially, they're the ones who, if they go back or find other members of their clan who see them working with these Storm Knights, then they're going to have a target on their head. Whereas a Ghost Clan or a Blue Spine or a Golden Sun, especially, might be able to talk their way and you're not
Or
going to.
wouldn't even have to bother just because, like, oh, you're with those guys? That's kind of cool. Tell us about
Hey,
that.
oh, he's with you. Come on in, type thing. The Red Jaw are like, wait, you're with them? No.
How have you
Star.
been contaminated? Come over here and pray to Lenala. We got to fix you.
So let's move to the last of the major clans, the White Spear Clan. So this is a bit longer than normal, but that is fine. They are in the Midwestern U.S., particularly ruins of Chicago and Detroit. Non-Enos Jakats. No. They just no. do not. If you're not an Enos, they will not accept you as a Jakat. If any tribe could be called outsider, so all the outsiders we've been talking about, these would be the White Spears. These Enos gained their name from their traditional use of sharpened dinosaur bones as weapons rather than forming spears from rock roots. Rock roots are, think of like bamboo that can still live as a spear in your hand that you can replant and it can grow. And it just shows that one with nature. The White Spear will take dinosaur bones, sharpen them into spears, and use them. They are also fond of using bones as body piercing, armor, and adornments, so they will use dead things more. The whites, or dead things, animals, death, that not just metal, but things that were alive that became dead. Their clan.
Gotta be particular here.
Right.
Yes.
The White Spear clan has always been standoffish, preferring to remain apart from most other tribes. This has only increased since they have gained a new leader, the heretic priest Thrakmos the Black. Under Thrakmos, the White Spears have changed their religious allegiance, and this is where it's important, from Lanala, a goddess of life, goddess of experience. They've changed that to the being known as Rex Stelek, who is a god of death. In the Living Land, the White Spear clan is mainly congregated in the Midwest U.S. Like I said, they are typically superstitious, interpreting any number of varied events. The more unusual, the better, as omens or portents. They often regard dinosaur bones as sacred, using the skulls, claws, teeth, rib cages to create shrines within their territory. They've domesticated a few dinosaurs, but typically prefer to forage alone, seeing dinosaurs largely as rivals and food sources rather than potential allies. They are slow to trust, quick to anger. Most of the tribe is fanatically loyal to Thrakmos. Troublemakers have often been transformed into shambling undead as punishment. Barak Ka himself, the High Lord of the Living Land, sees Thrakmos and his followers as heretics and enemies of Lanala, leading to a number of violent clashes between the Red Jaw and White Spear clan. So, Jay, your thoughts on the White Spear?
I think the White Spear have kind of been like criminally underused so far in any kind of official capacity. They're one of the more interesting clans. Now, I'm pretty sure that it directly says you cannot be a player character from the White Spear. Or at the very least, maybe you can, but you just can't take the Rex Stalic Gotak miracle list, is what it is. But so no playing with the God of Death. You have to go to Isle for that. I find them very interesting. They don't really worry about domesticating a dinosaur, because if they want to do that, they'll just kill it and then raise it as an undead construct. I suppose we should talk a little bit like their worship of Rex Stalic. I kind of flip between both pronunciations all the time, but that Thrakmos released the entity, and I guess the cosmology is still a little up in the air for Torg Eternity as to how Rex Stalic and Lanala work together. I know we discussed this in a previous episode, but the fact that they actively worship death, like active death, and partially renewal, like it's, you know, it's normally two sides of the same coin. But as Lanala isn't necessarily what you think of when you think of a life god, Rex Stalic also isn't necessarily always the same as like traditional necromancer, again from Isle might be. So there's a lot of wiggle room in how you use this, but they're even probably more xenophobic than the Red Jaws. They don't want anyone around unless they're undead. They literally just want to kill everything. And that means that's a problem for Barak Ka, because he needs the possibility energy from people. So he doesn't want them to completely wipe cities out and turn them into a necropolis like Chicago or Detroit. And that's one of the interesting things is that those places have become such no-go zones. Like Delphi Council sending agents there is almost suicide because, at least in the Living Land, most of the place, yeah, there's dinosaurs, yeah, there's Adinos, but you could talk with them, you could deal with it, but if you go there, it's just a city of the dead. There's nothing you can really do about it. If they see you, you have to fight. It's kind of like running through like a horde of zombies or Jiangxi or something. It's gonna be rough. So while the Ghost Clan, I sort of said at the very beginning, like, they can't really be the boogeyman for too long. I kind of feel that the White Spear are the big boogeyman in the Living Land, both to humans and to the Edinos, because it's almost unheard of. Because this is what you've really got to be wondering, what the Red Jaws are thinking. An entire clan officially separated from the war. Thrakmos said, screw you, I'm not taking orders from this so-called Tsar. We worship a different god. We claim this land. If you come here, we kill you. And I don't think Barakah's taking it well. And you just have to wonder how all of the others are reacting, the other clans, that is. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. And like I said, I think they're criminally underused. They should be involved in some more stuff. And I hope to see more about them. But right now, you can really just sort of think of them, yeah, undead dinosaurs, giant T-Rex skeleton. There you go.
Mark, your thoughts on the White Spear?
I want to echo Jay's criminally underused statement simply because you've got a tremendous story element here that has just gotten almost no exposure whatsoever. We could do an entire book on Thrakmos and Rex Telek and Barukah and the clash between them. In fact, that's, if you want to set something up to where the players really are in a rock and a hard place, put them between the Red Jaw and the White Spear. Barukah's, he it, they are Thrakmos is a rival for Barukah, and 100%, and Barukah is the Tsar of Tsars, and he brooks no rivals, but he can't seem to get rid of Thrakmos. And Rex Telek is, you look, the White Spear could, you could have the White Spear be trying to make the case that they're just part of the circle of life, just like Lanala is. We're just at different ends of it, right? Her survival is survival at this end by things growing, but in order for things to survive at this end, they have to kill something and eat it. And so, we're surviving just like you're surviving. We just do it different than you do, and it looks different. Why are we being persecuted? Well, because it's Lanala versus Rex Telek. But the White Spear clan is as xenophobic as they get. No humans, period. And because they're all about Rex Telek and worshiping death, when they encounter them, they just, you just rub them out because we don't have any use for them. If they're in my way, I don't have a problem with just killing the humans, because they just, they're a bug to me. They don't do anything for me. If they're dead, at least I can use them as a raw material. I can make something, I can make something out of their bones, or I can turn them into an undead something that helps us, like the dinosaurs help the Gold Sun. But other than that, stay out of my way is the best way to not get killed by the White Spear. Because they have an affinity for the bones, that makes them, I mean, that's like, the bright colors on an insect, or bright colors on a something in nature kind of tells people, hey, you might want to stay away from this thing because it's a warning. The bones are a warning from the White Spear. When you see them, you should be concerned because they're serious about all of this stuff. The other Adinos, when they see them, the fight's on. There's no, oh, let's see if they're nice White Spear. No, there are no white knights White Spear. Kill them. because they're coming to kill us. So yeah, they're natural enemies of everybody that worships Lanaw. But here's where you get kind of that turns into a kind of an advantage because they're very superstitious, right? And so there's a trope in movies that when you get a primitive people and the heroes back onto a burial ground and they don't know they're standing on a burial ground, and all of a sudden the primitive people stop because they see their warning signs that this is a sacred ground. They start doing whatever they do and they back away. That's the White Spear Clan. They're super superstitious, very superstitious. So if you can get them in a situation where they think that bad luck, bad juju, whatever is coming to get them, they'll honor that 100%. So they absolutely are that gives them they give that flavors their Optins and Gotaks in a way that other tribes may not be flavored. That you can play that from a GM standpoint as and set the White Spear apart. And Barukha absolutely does not have a need for the. I mean, if they would turn from Thrakmos and Rex to Lek, he'd take them back as long as they denounced everything that they were doing. And but he's perfectly happy to just eradicate them and rub them out because they've proven that they're like, no, we're following this guy over here. Oh, okay, let me just deal with you in the old school way and take care of you. Which is, I think, in my opinion, that's kind of his preference because he's got a that sends a message to all the other Edinos that you better stay in line or this is going to happen to you too. But he hasn't, and that's the thing, he hasn't been able to yet. And that's a problem.
It's a busy guy.
Yeah, he is that, but that's his excuse right now is he's got a lot going on, and he really does have a lot going on with the invasion, but that's masking the truth that he hasn't been able to deal with Thrakmos and Rex Dalek. If he wants to, he certainly can, but he has to put a pin in the invasion and turn everything towards Thrakmos to deal with him. And I think his calculus at this point is that it's going to take more than he's willing to give up, and it'll cost him the invasion potentially if he stops and deals with these guys. The problem is if he doesn't deal with Thrakmos and do it soon, that's going to cost him the invasion too, because eventually Thrakmos is going to get strong enough to where he can challenge him and take over. And then it doesn't matter. It's not Barukha's invasion anymore. It's Thrakmos's, which actually from a long game story perspective is worse for everybody based on what Thrakmos and Rex Dalek believe. So, I mean, if you told Khor Earthers you're going to be subjugated, your choice is Barukha and his Red Jaw or Thrakmos and his White Spear. Those are the only two choices. Who would you like to serve under? Red Jaw, please. 100%. Thank you. Right? So, yeah, there is no the Delphi Council. There is no working with the Delphi Council. These are natural enemies, just like Barukha, which gives you another interesting story opportunity with the Delphi Council. You could set that up to where the Delphi Council and Barukha have to work together to deal with the right White Spear. So now you've got, I don't like you very much and you don't like me very much. Just last week we were killing each other, but we're gonna stop that for now. We're gonna deal with these guys right now. So that's another interesting story that you can tell. From a player's perspective, I don't see how you pull that off. I mean, I you could, I guess. But the White Spear just don't want anything to do with the Delphi Council. They don't have a use for them. I mean, their faith-based Optins and Gotaks, as superstitious as they are, could make it for an interesting bent. Maybe that they've discovered that, they're backsliding away from Rex Dalek. They've discovered the truth, and they really want to go back to Lanala, and that's the thing. But that's yeah, you're not getting any humans. There are no White Spear humans.
They wouldn't even have any opt-ins, would they?
Well, I mean, it's like
I
it's
don't think
almost
that.
like
I don't think that they do. I think they just forego the whole life aspect. Because when you look at the perks for Rex Delek, there's just Gotek, and for Lanala, there's both Optin and Gotek.
fair. I mean, I guess you don't get healing then?
Death, not
Well,
yeah,
healing.
yep, that's all, okay. Your healing is that we'll raise you as the shambling thing over here. So if you die, we're gonna make you're still useful, just in a useful in a different way. So it's part of your pri it's part of your passage into the next plane of usefulness for Rex Delek. Thank you for your sacrifice. It's appreciated. Now go die over there quietly, I guess.
So one thing I did want to bring up about Thrakmos and the White Spear is, from my understanding, this is a brand new clan. This wasn't necessarily something that came over in the invasion. When we're looking at Thrakmos's history on 84, it's talking about how not long after the initial invasion began, a new player emerged on the scene, and that's talking about Thrakmos. Says he devoted himself to Rex Dalek, and then it says, in time, he gathered a number of tribes under his leadership, the Whitespear Clan, naming them. Oh, sorry. Later on, it does say they accompanied him across the Stormbridge.
It is a newer
But it
clan,
is a
but not
newer
super
clan.
new.
But it's, yeah. And one of the things is, we've talked about when we went through all the High Lords and all the Darkness devices, that there are combinations that work really well together. And then there are combinations that absolutely would rather have another Darkness device or a High Lord. Barakah and Rekpokken have worked well together, but every darkness device is going to be looking elsewhere because they want the best person. They want the best individual that can get them eating and destroying as many possibilities as possible. So when Thrakmos was able to, take a bunch of tribes, and how I'm reading this, you might read it different, because it just says he gathered a number of tribes under his leadership. He was then probably taking them from maybe different clans. Maybe he took a Ghost Clan tribe and a Red Jaw tribe and united them and got them to be his White Spear clan. So that's. When you have a Sar of Sar and Barak-Kah, who's supposed to be the big guy over everything, and some new guy comes in and starts taking various factions away from the cores to make his own, that is going to signal that darkness device that, hey, this person has potential. And a let's see how things go. It's not, I'm not saying Rekpokken is going to just toss away Barak-Kah. But it might not help him as much against Thrakmos, just to see which of these two is deserving of me being their darkness device. So hopefully that gives everybody listening some food for thought. Again, we did go about a half an hour over, but I felt that it would be advantageous to have all of these clans in one episode, so and not breaking it apart. Thank you again for viewing and or listening. Please do email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We'll answer questions, we'll make comments on your comments, etc. And until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.